What's up, Disrupt Nation? So my name is Anthony Delgado, and I am your host for this evening. And today we have a really, really special guest. He really is a curator of the New York startup tech ecosystem. He launched Startup Boost in 2014, which is a 30,000 member startup event series and ecosystem that hosts over 25 tech and startup events every year, including mixers, panels, investor nights, and expos in New York City. He is also the founder of BizDex, which provides pitch deck design and investor relations services for startups. He is the one and the only, the man, the myth, the legend, Jason Malik. Jason, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit more of how did you get started in the startup ecosystem and what gave you the ambition to start Startup Boost?
Great question. So a lot of it honestly goes all the way back to, I'd say, like my childhood. So like both my parents are entrepreneurs. They're more in like brick and mortar, like wholesale manufacturing. And growing up, I was always around that, right? So either I was like in the factory, like breaking boxes or like unloading trucks, or I was like behind the cash register. And I realized like I loved entrepreneurship and like that's who I was, but it's something where I didn't necessarily want to be like in that type of industry for the rest of my career. So like as I went into college, it was something where like I started to try to explore like what else is out there. And my freshman year was 2006. I went to Rutgers University in Newark. And basically while I was there, it was something where like I remember seeing like Facebook starting to get big, YouTube was kind of blowing up at that time. And I was like, wow, this is such a good, cool thing. Like you could just literally sit behind the computer and, you know, make money somehow. Not that those two guys were making money, but even like eBay existed and there's a few other ones coming up. And I was like, there has to be a way. Like it's just, it's such a huge platform, like the internet. And like there's so many ways to like access just people across the globe and to eventually, you know, potentially monetize that. That really blew my mind. So while I was at Rutgers Newark, my brother actually started this video startup. It was called WebVs, and basically it was kind of like a YouTube, except there was an annual awards. So that annual awards was something where, like, because he was more of like a film, he did some like film directing, so it was more for kind of like a YouTube for creatives. And basically got to the point to where like he launched it. We had a couple videos posted, you know, it was something where you could like watch videos, you could comment, that type of thing. And even though it wasn't like the most robust, you know, technology or whatever, just the fact that my brother was able to do that like with his team and figure that out, I was like, wow, this is like the, it just blew my mind. You know, like imagine 10, 15 years ago seeing all that. It just kind of really changed my perspective on things. And so I was just very hungry to get into the ecosystem. But the thing is, like, I'm from North Jersey and like I have a lot of family around here. And I was like, you know, the only scene that I knew about really was San Francisco. And I was like, realistically, I'm probably not going to go to San Francisco. So it was something where I was looking to see if New York had anything going on. So it was always kind of in the back of my mind, like, how do I get into that ecosystem? And then I ended up transferring from Rutgers.
And what year is this, do you
this
think?
Was, okay, so this was still 06 when I kind of, everything kind of became front and center for me. And I felt like I was going to go down this path. And then what happened was, I want to say like 2 or 3 years later, I transferred to Montclair State University in Jersey. And they didn't have an entrepreneurship club, right? So I'm looking around, I'm like, damn, I really want to have like a group that I can like just talk to about like being an entrepreneur and all these things. And so I went to the dean of the business school. I was like, hey, can I start an entrepreneurship club? He's like, yeah. He's like, why don't you reach out to like the other universities and kind of see how they're doing it and then come back to me. So I went to like NYU, Columbia, Fordham. I reached back out to Rutgers. I was like, hey, like, do you guys have a club? Do you have any advice on launching? And the guy from NYU was like, hey, I have this thing called NYC Startup Mixers. He's like, we're basically an event series. We do business mixers for startups. So for me, that was almost like, shit, like these guys are doing exactly like what I want to do. Like I want to be involved in this ecosystem. And so the short of it is that he brought me on as like an intern, because he was also an interning the guy for the thing called NYC Startup Mixers. Sorry, to be clear, he ran the entrepreneurship club for NYU. And he was like giving me advice on that. And then he also was a part of NYC Startup Mixers as an intern. So basically we both joined the team. And then after like a year or so, the guy who actually ran it ended up leaving. And he's like, hey guys, do you want my list? So he probably had like 6,000 or 8,000 emails on there. So yeah, that was kind of like a jackpot. Wow. So for us, I was like, wow, like this is an unbelievable opportunity. So we ended up taking the list and kind of doing our own thing, right? So we were doing mixers predominantly for the most part early on, just networking events. And then we eventually did a couple panels. We actually did a panel with Vengo, who ended up raising the most money on Shark Tank, like in their history for at least a while. I don't know if they're still number one, but like while they were still kind of like figuring out the hardware behind their product. So that was cool. Like we got to, you know, get in on a panel with what became a huge brand eventually. So we tested a few events here and there. And then when eventually was, you know, we ended up joining a co-working space. There's one in New York City called Alley NYC. And we were their events team for like 6 to 8 months, I want to say. And after a while, I was like, you know what? This is cool. I enjoy this, but I kind of want to start my own brand and see if I can like push this out and create something bigger, like just a solo event series. And, you know, I got my partner's blessing. He was like, go for it. So I basically launched what was originally Alley Boost about 4 or 5 years ago. And we ended up rebranding to Startup Boost. And just over the years, you know, we took it from like that, like 6 or 8,000 up to 30,000. It's been something where, you know, I host 25 events a year. We're continually putting out events, you know, word of mouth, people signing up to our newsletter. Like whenever people RSVP to our events, we take them and, you know, add them to our newsletter and grow the numbers. And, you know, initially it was something where it was more of, I just wanted to use it as like a vehicle to, you know, build up my network. But it eventually became something much bigger, which I never really intended off the bat. And, you know, now here we are 5 years later and, you know, it's something that generates, you know, revenue and we have about, you know, maybe 10, 15 sponsors at least annually. Because, you know, everyone wants to get into the ecosystem, whether it's like law firms, accounting firms, big tech startups, like they want access to the, like the rest of the community. So at the end of the day, what we do is, you know, give them access to that. And we help the entrepreneurs to, you know, enter the ecosystem and learn and connect. So that's been kind of like the journey from like a bird's eye view. And from that is how I launched BizDex, which is like a whole nother thing we can get into. But for me, like the first step in my career was really just establishing my network and just giving as much as possible. Like the first couple of years, I really wasn't making that much money, like very little. I was still working like in the family business a couple of days a week, hustling. You know, something where in the back of my mind, I was always like, just keep growing it. Don't think too much about, you know, how much you're making right now. Just stay on that straight path. Very and eventually, cool. Like things will come together.
I feel like that's the kind of what biggest it's been, you know? And the best companies, they're usually not started with the intention of making money, right? There was a kid, he put a comment in a Facebook group. He was asking for help. He was like, hey, guys, I'm trying to start a blog. I want to know, how do I get started? So I said, hey, listen, you can go WordPress.org or Medium, right? And his next comment was, okay, and how do I monetize it? And the first thing that came into my head is this freaking kid. You know, yeah, exactly. Basically, yeah, if your years, number yeah, one reason for starting something like that is how do I monetize it, you're going to have a really, really tough time, especially something like that, right? But if you look at like things like Facebook, if you look at things, you know, these really big prolific companies, Google, they were started mission driven. You know, I was actually recently interviewed Sophia. Right. She started Pelotos 151, and they're essentially the WeWork of Puerto Rico. And she started it because she was solving her own problem. She wanted a co-working. She travels the world. She's from Puerto Rico, and when she came home, she didn't have a space to work. And that's why she started the first co-working space in Puerto Rico. And now it's this big thing. They're up to the second location. The third location is opening in about 2 months. They have a waiting list out the door. And, you know, but it didn't start that way. I'm sure she's making a lot of money from it now. But it didn't start that way. It started out as, hey, I have a problem and I want to solve it. So similar to you, you know, you had a problem. There wasn't an ecosystem for startups at your school, and now it's morphed into this really a staple in the New York startup community. I mean, honestly, my hats are off to you because you know, like you mentioned, New York startup scene is not San Francisco. And so it's companies like yours that really, you know, put New York on the map as a viable second competitor to San Francisco.
Right, absolutely. No, and listen, I mean, like, you're kind of nailing it on the head. It's something where, you know, that's what it's about, man, especially early on. But it depends on what stage of your career you're at, right? So I feel like early on in your career, it should be something where you're more in, like, that give mode. And obviously, you should be in give mode throughout your career, but, like, especially early on. Like, I used to always, like, take, like, you know, internships and all these different things where I barely got paid anything, at most like $200 for my commute, you know, like, and I would just take these jobs that weren't necessarily paying me anything. Like I did an internship at a development shop and like app agency early on, because even before the events, because I want to like get some insight as to like how the hell do you even build an app or website, you know? Like then with the events, I went with the intent of building my network. Like early on, if you have to sacrifice money to ultimately get like a skill or knowledge or connection, really go for it, because the ROI on that long term in your career is huge, right? So for like the younger entrepreneurs, I'd say really like sacrifice if you have to, because I understand as you get older, like the reality of it is you have expenses, right? You have your rent, you have a car, you have all these things. You have to make money, and like you have to have a job that pays, or you know, or at least like you have to be breaking even on your hustle or whatever it is. But if you're young and you have like a little bit of cushion, where like, you know, say you live at home or whatever it is, and you can kind of take a few risks and spend some more time not necessarily making a ton of money, like go for those opportunities, because long term, that's going to be like, you're going to look back and be like, wow, definitely one of the best moves of my career, you know?
Yeah, and it's about planting seeds, right? Like, you know, especially early on in your career, you know, you're planting seeds inside yourself so that you can grow as a person. You're planting seeds with the relationships that you build. And yeah, I think a lot of young entrepreneurs, they're short-sighted, you know? If you wanted to, if your sole purpose was to make money, there are tons of ways to do that. And especially the startup ecosystem probably isn't the most reliable. There's a lot of ups and downs really there, right? So, you know, you could go get a job at Morgan Stanley or some other place. But I have tons of friends who, you know, kind of went that route and came back running and screaming for purpose.
It happens a lot. They get burned out. I met with somebody the other day at WeWork Labs. It's like one of their accelerator programs. And she just came out of finance. And she was like, I literally got checked into the hospital because of like the amount of hours at the work. Like she literally, I don't know if she fainted or had some sort of health issue that came from like the corporate schedule. So like, you know, that does happen. People try to, you know, go corporate, not to trash out. Obviously some people, their career corporates and they do very well. But for a lot of people, it's something where like, you know, you're not really chasing your passion. You can, and a lot of, I mean, at least from what I hear, a lot of people are like, oh, I feel dead inside. I don't love what I'm doing. Like for me, it's like, I wake up every day with a smile on my face. You know, like I enjoy it. Even when I struggled like financially early on, I was depressed. I was like, dude, this is so much fun. I don't even care that I'm not really banking yet. You know what I mean? Like that's one of the, I guess, one of the big pros of kind of working in the, having your own venture or working in the early stage. It's something where like a lot of it's passion driven, and through that over time, you're able to solve a lot of your problems and create something that can make money or, you know, achieve that next, the next step in your journey.
Definitely. So you started Startup Boost. You get blessed with this with this email list, and you kind of inherit this movement that originated in college. And then, how do you start monetizing? And you know, what were some of the struggles there in the early days?
Fantastic question. So as far as monetization early on, what we were doing was we would just charge for admission. A lot of the times, we were more focused on growing the community. So like we do a lot of free tickets and just continue to build up the community. So we do like an early bird ticket that was free, and then regular tickets would be like $10, like nothing crazy, right? And then we throw in some sponsorships for like $100, $200, $300. And then over time, what we realized was a lot of these sponsors didn't just want to go to one event, right? They'd rather be at, you know, four or five events throughout the year, so they have a more likelihood of like having a solid impression on our community and converting them as clients. So what we realized is it's better to actually package the annual sponsorship. So what we started doing was annual sponsorships. So we charge anywhere between like $1,000 and $5,000 for the year for like a law firm or an accounting firm. And like they'd have, you know, five events where they have booths, three speaker opportunities in our newsletter 10 times a year. And that actually is when we really started hitting like legitimate revenue, was after like analyzing and hosting a bunch of events, we realized there was an opportunity to actually like scale up the revenue. And so like the first, like the year after we discovered that, we probably doubled, if not like tripled revenue. But yeah, early on, it wasn't making that much money, to be honest. It was kind of like a struggle. And then eventually, once we kind of figured, hey, you know, a lot of these brands want to get in front of this community, let's start charging them for that, this, that. And like we packaged it in that annual manner, start to see significant numbers. But early on, it wasn't making much. Yeah.
Very cool. And so there's all these different startups that are kind of in the community. And you know, startups, they kind of get a bad rap. So if you had to give a few tips to startups before they pitch an investor? What are some tips that
great you question? Think, so young as far as the investor front specifically, I'd say one of the biggest things is, you know, you can approach an investor early on more of like mentorship, being like, hey, I just launched a startup. You know, it's a sports startup. I noticed you're in the sports space. I just want it to be on your radar. Like, that's one thing. There's nothing wrong with that. Just to kind of plant this seed and let them be aware of you. But like, I wouldn't go to an investor at like the idea stage with like no traction and none of your money put in or anything and be like, give me $1 million. Like, they're going to laugh you out of the room. Especially nowadays, even more than like 5-10 years ago, KPIs or key performance indicators are very big with investors. So they're going to want to see like a certain amount of users, certain amount that you're retaining monthly, maybe even some revenue depending on your product. And then they're going to take you seriously. Otherwise, they're probably just going to keep ignoring your emails. So as far as investors specifically, I'd either, you know, approach them in the manner of like, hey, I'm just looking for like a mentor or two if you could be helpful, or if I could just like check in with you every 6 months as to my progress. Or if you're serious about raising capital, just make sure, you know, you have your, you know, product market fit, or if, you know, make sure there's like a need for your product in the market. And if you can, definitely nail down some KPIs or key partnerships or something that makes it realistic for the investor. Because they're not going to invest at the, you know, at the idea stage unless like you've had like a successful exit, or like, you know what I mean, you've sold the company. Like, they're not going to throw in money unless you have like that really legit validation. I know for young entrepreneurs, you usually don't have that. It's just like you and your hustle. So it's something where you got to just keep on sweating it out until like you hit some numbers. And then from there, it's probably the best time to actually, you know, maybe angel investors or an accelerator, or like an early stage fund, you know?
Definitely. What advice do you have for non-technical founders? Because I feel like that, you know, if you can code, then you can put a lot of hustle and a lot of sweat equity into your idea and get it
awesome
launched.
Awesome question. I face that a lot within what about our ecosystem. Like, one of the code. Biggest requests I get are like, oh, do you know technical co-founders? There's definitely a huge demand for it, but it's tough to land them because a lot of them can just go out and get a job with a startup for like, I don't know, 80 or if not six figures, like 80,000 up to like 100,000 plus. So like, why would they come work for you for some equity? So to combat that as a non-technical founder, I mean, one thing you could do is just learn to code, right? You could just suck it up, and like, there's a bunch of online, free online classes and that type of thing. And I'm sure you could like figure out like at least like a first version of your product. That's one, if you really don't have a budget. Two, if you know, one thing I tell a lot of people is, look, why not hold down a day job or like another hustle that's like guaranteed money every month. And maybe you can hire a dev shop to create like an MVP or minimum viable product, which is like a first version. So like maybe, yeah, take, you know, work in the family business or work at freaking Trader Joe's or whatever it is and save up, or work at a restaurant and save up some money and like pay a dev shop to do like a couple thousand dollars for like a basic version of your product, enough for you to like get users and that type of thing. So that's another option. And then, I mean, or you could give up a lot of equity. So say you find somebody who's willing to give, you know, say, hey, I'll take 50% or 30% of the company and I'll code the entire thing and your co-founders. That's kind of the third option. So yeah, those are kind of the three approaches. I say either one was learn to code, you know, have a hustle or a day job and pay a dev shop, or give up a significant percentage to a developer and let him be your him or her.
Definitely. I think there is a little bit of a problem with, or almost an epidemic with like non-technical founders, that they, you know, they're not willing to really like roll their sleeves up.
Yeah.
There's a female founder that I met, and she taught herself how to code and built, I think she was using like Zapier. And I don't, she just slapped a bunch of stuff together, but it looks amazing. And she built a whole jobs platform. And then she turned it into a business, and now it's a business where she I think she specializes in like marketing or creative job hiring. So if you want to hire someone, you go on her platform, she charges you a fee, and you're able to hire people. And she built her whole business, and she doesn't know how to code. She barely knew how to code, but she slapped some stuff together and she used the tools that were available. You know, the other thing that I encourage people to do is like, what's the offline version of your app, right? I was on a coaching call with some founders. They have an app that does it's basically like for sports ranting. The name of the app is Rant, and it's an app for sports ranting. And, you know, okay, you know, we got a quote from a dev shop. You know, they're charging us $30K to build this app, XYZ. And I was like, listen, why don't you do this? Go to a Jets game, go tailgating, and grab your camera phone and open the phone app and actually record some people ranting and say, hey, we're coming out with an app. It lets you rant on camera about your favorite team, and get 20 people to do it. You know what I mean? Like, find the way to do it without spending $30K. You know, even if you had $30K, because even after you build the app, now you have to market it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even in something that's even like more basic than that is like literally going to and like create a survey, be like, yo, I'm thinking about making this site. Like, you know, where do you currently rant about sports? Are there specific platforms like you spend most of your day online to like get your sports news? Like maybe just even like a basic 4 or 5 question survey. I don't know. I'm thinking a lot here, but like there, even like, you know what I mean? To your point, like do something like where you record some things and plus throw in like a survey all of a sudden and give away like a free shirt if like they answer it or something, or like free bottles. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, there's a couple things you could do where you're not necessarily spending 30 grand, maybe spend 100, 200 bucks, and you have a good idea of like, does anyone even care about this? You know what I'm saying? And like, is it even worth me spending the next year or two, you know, blood, sweat, and tears, all that fun stuff? You know what I'm saying? Like, so.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, minimal viable idea.
Right? Yeah. MVI, I like that.
I had another person who I was having a coaching session with, and she has another sports related thing, and she wanted to do like coaching for kids by top athletes, but she wanted to deliver it via like VR or AR. And I was like, okay, let's remove the VR and AR real quick.
Yeah. One step at a time.
Yeah, one step at a time. And now she's actually creating a whole company that has no tech required, and it's just going to be like a summer program. And it's like, okay, run your summer program for a few years, make some money, and then you can, you know, do your VR app or whatever.
You know what I think a huge part of the issue is? I think it's almost psychological. It comes down to like ego, right? So like some people are like, she heard the buzzword AR, VR, right? And she's like, all right, I get that's how I'm going to like get people excited and get investors excited. But sometimes you try to do a million different things and try to get these buzzwords going and all that, and you end up taking away from what could be a very legit business that you touched upon. Now, all of a sudden, she removed all that stuff, and she has something very real in front of her where she can actually activate it and get it going. And then eventually, yeah, okay, she raises the round. All of a sudden, she hires the CTO who does the AR, VR. That's very hard to see, though, sometimes when you have an idea, just because, you know, you're caught up in like your vision, and there's nothing wrong with that. But sometimes it's good to take like that dose of reality and just see if there's like a more viable idea off the bat, at least. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely. So you start Startup Boost, you start getting these partnerships and these and these sponsorships, and it begins to grow. And then at what point did you start hitting scale and you kind of step back and you're like, oh wow, this isn't the Startup Boost that I started in college?
Yeah, man. I mean, that for me to get to that point, took me a couple of years. I don't know the exact, maybe 2 years, three, maybe even 2-3 years. Because like early on, it was always something that I thought of as kind of a Trojan horse, right? Like for me, it was again, like I used to get like consulting gigs because I was like the Startup Boost guy, right? So like I send out my resume to people in New York, and I'd be like, oh, I run Startup Boost. I have 30, you know, whatever. Back then it was like 20,000 members. You know, I have a huge Rolodex of like C to Series B founders who like take my email and who I can like, you know, set up calls with and make potential clients for you. So for me, it was always something where like I just thought of it as a Trojan horse to get like consulting gigs and to like, obviously the whole idea was to give back, you know what I'm saying? But like on top of that, on like the revenue side of it, I never even thought about it as like a legit revenue source. And then yeah, probably 2-3 years later, once we started getting a lot of like law firms and tech startups and accounting firms like doing sponsorship on a consistent basis, that's when I was like, wow, okay, this actually makes money, you know? So I'll probably say a couple years into it. And that's when I kind of got more serious about it and started rolling out more events and trying different things. But like, honestly, I like kind of touched coming back to just keeping it basic. I was keeping it pretty basic, doing like mixers and panels, like nothing crazy. Now I'm doing like, you know, startup expos and investor conference, but like I wasn't doing any of that off the bat. It was something where as I saw more money coming in and seeing that I could devote more time and resources to it and be more heads down on it, that's when I started to get a little more creative with it and started doing, you know, the next step of it, the next iteration.
Definitely.
Which I'm still doing. I'm always testing. I'm always learning. So
definitely. What do you think you understand about the New York tech scene that outsiders don't really get?
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably say one of the biggest things with the New York scene specifically is that everyone's so busy, So whenever you're communicating with someone in the New York scene, I feel like the conversation honestly needs to be very value driven, right? So like every time I reach out to someone in the New York scene, and like whether it's like a successful founder or whatever else, I just give, right? I'm just like, how can I help this person? What can I do for them? Like I'm always just in give mode. And if they reciprocate, they reciprocate. If not, it's not a big deal. You know, it's like, it's almost like sales, right? When it comes to like dealing with this scene, it's something where you should have to continue to just give. They're going to slam, you know, 9 doors in your face. And the 10th one's going to be, you know, the founder of Foursquare who says, yeah, I'll speak at your growth conference, which happened, you know, like, so, you know what I'm saying? Like but to get to that guy, I had a lot of no's, you know? So yeah, just be value driven. I mean, at least in the New York scene, just like deliver as much value as you can for everyone around you. And don't do it. No, like thinking like, all right, just for giving them this, I'm going to get that. Just give. And if it comes back, if it comes back, if it doesn't, it's not a big deal. It's at the end of the day, it's a numbers game, you know?
Definitely.
What, outside of it being genuine and like being from the heart, obviously that too, you know, that's like the main thing, but
yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I mean, it's practice. I mean, you're going to get better at whatever it is that you're doing. And you know, and the seeds that you're planting, you don't know when they're going to come to harvest. I think, exactly. Similar to like when you actually do plant a tree, right? If you plant a tree and then you don't wait and you try to dig the seed out or try to eat it before it's ripe, right? It's not going to taste very good.
Right.
So really just deploying patience to networking and business, right?
Yeah. And like to speak to that, I guess that's probably a good place to kind of plug BizDex. So like, you know, I just launched BizDex, like I want to say about 4 or 5 months ago. Like you touched upon them, I saw a huge demand for, like, I do a lot of these pitch nights. They're kind of like a Shark Tank in the States. You know, you get a bunch of investors, a bunch of startups, they pitch and they get feedback and insight. And I noticed a lot of these startups, you know, they're putting their blood, sweat, and tears into these companies, but that first impression with the investor, which was the deck, was very poor. And at the end of the day, it's an extension of your work, right? So
no, you have one shot at bat with a lot of these guys. Yes. They look at it and that's it, you know? What's one of the biggest mistakes that you see startup pitch decks that they have or don't have in their pitch decks?
Yeah, so great question. So what I see a lot of the time is that these founders, especially with fundraising, just use a ton of text. And you know, I understand that they're trying to communicate their message, but like we even had a client this morning. I was like, look, you know, there's a lot of text here. I do want to take a good amount of it out and make it like visual. And he's like, yeah, he's like, I'll just leave the ball in your court. Because like it's his first time and he didn't know that, like, you know, the investors at the end of the day, they're humans, right? They have human psychology like the rest of us. And if it's all text, they're going to get bored. But if we can put up a bunch of beautiful visuals to explain, like, you know, how you have a good product market fit, you know, the size of your market, instead of like writing out all these things, it's a lot more effective when trying to keep their attention for 10 or 15 minutes, you know? So I guess one of the big mistakes is that people try to go too heavy on text and not enough on visual. And also you got to realize nowadays, a lot of people are on their phones, right? So you know, when someone opens up a presentation on their phone, if it's a bunch of text, it's going to be tough for them to like consume it. But if it's a few graphics on their phone, they'll get it a lot quicker. You know what I mean? So just definitely limit the text. That's a big mistake I see across the board. So then going back to kind of what we were talking about earlier around the kind of like planting that seed and growing it with BizDex, it's something where I had been growing a Startup Boost for like 4 or 5 years and I was like, wait, how do I like not only grow the community, but just like monetize this in a way that's beneficial, obviously, for myself and for the community. So that's where like I saw the big opening with the deck design, and also a lot of people want to meet investors. So I kind of rolled out like a consulting arm there where I connected a bunch of the investors I knew from the events to the startups. And, you know, we're 3 or 4 months into it and we're putting up like, you know, pretty solid numbers. And I would have never been able to have this type of start if it wasn't for me spending the last 5 years, you know, kind of building it up and, you know, just giving more than anything else. And now at this point, it's something where a lot of people in the ecosystem are gladly referring me business because they know I've helped them so many times in the past for like, you know, whether it was bringing them clients or, you know, having them speak on panels or introducing them to other founders. Like I've always just gave these things and never thought about it. And then, you know, once I launch a business and I ping them about it, all of a sudden, you know, a handful of them are sending me like 3-4 clients, which is amazing, especially early on with like an agency. You know, it's very hard to find your first couple clients. And I was lucky enough to do it through like word of mouth in my network, just because they all knew me from Startup Boost.
Yeah, definitely. I think people definitely underestimate karma and the value of your word and your reputation and goodwill, right? Absolutely. Who are some of the like your biggest influences and your biggest mentors in the space, and what type of value, if you don't want to name the names, what type of value have you gotten from them?
I mean, going back like outside of the scene, but just in general, definitely like my parents, because they're both entrepreneurs. So like my dad's type of guy, he's like 72 and he's still like the first one, like, you know, he's up early in the morning, he's not back till late. Like whether he's, you know, previously was like in the stores from like when they opened till when they closed, like he would literally be going on like deliveries, like dropping off couches and doing all this crazy shit. And now he's like getting into construction and like he's like nonstop with that type of stuff. So as far as work ethic, I definitely learned it from my father. Like it's just, you should keep working, man. Like he's been an entrepreneur for a long time. And like what I learned just watching him over the years just motivated me to just fucking, you know, be the first one in, the last one out. You know what I mean? And then my mom was also a good influence because like she was always an entrepreneur and I just learned some things from her. In this scene specifically, in the tech scene, I was lucky enough early on. There's this guy Wazi, Professor Wazi. He's from Mercy College. He runs our entrepreneurship center, and he's been very helpful with my events, like letting us host events there, and we help his students to get internships and that type of thing. And it's been something where like he's kind of, you know, consulted in a way for Startup Boost for a long time, and he's been kind of, I'd probably say, my biggest mentor with Startup Boost, like to the point to where like, you know, we talk a couple times a week, and he just kind of gives me some advice on like how to improve things, how to, you know, iterate. He's a real smart guy, UPenn, Stanford, all that fun stuff. I'm definitely not as smart. So it was good to have somebody who's like, yeah, who has like that type of background, just like spend the time and like help me grow that. I mean, who else? I mean, there's been so many people along the way. It's like a ridiculous amount. Like for me to name names, it would probably take me all day. It's just been throughout the years. There's always been like a, you know, golden nugget from this person and that person. And even these days, like I have a few younger guys who work with me and I learn a lot from them, you know, just kind of like watching them and like their growth. It reminds me of certain things that I had to go through and makes me kind of like reanalyze some of the stuff that I'm doing now just to make sure I'm kind of, you know, when you see like younger people, you kind of just see them, you know, in growth mode and like where they're just like consuming everything around them. So it's kind of like refreshing to see that. It kind of reminds you to like that you're not 100 years old. Like it's still time for you to learn and look around and that.
Yeah, definitely reminds me of a kid I worked with at Founders. And he had so much hustle, and he has like that fire in his eyes. He's just like, yeah, we'll do it. We'll just figure it out, you know.
Yeah, figure it out. Absolutely.
And I love what you're saying about your pops too. You know, like people act like entrepreneurship is some new thing, and literally everyone was an entrepreneur. If you look back to like the 1800s or even the early 1900s, you know, everyone had a butcher shop, they had a bakery, they had, you know, the family business.
Shoemaker, whatever the fuck, yeah.
So everyone really was an entrepreneur, and I think it's a natural part of capitalism and just a natural part of society.
Yeah, you know what was good for me, like having to like seeing my parents as entrepreneurs growing up, like, you know, they had their ups and their downs, and like kind of being around that growing up, knowing that like entrepreneurship, like what you see on Instagram right now, like people with like their Ferraris and all that, that's all like 90% that's BS, God. Right? Like,
don't get me started on the Ferraris. Like,
yeah, exactly. So like growing up, seeing like the reality of it, knowing it's not that glorious and it's more struggle than anything else. Like I feel like so many entrepreneurs are like taken aback by like, oh my God, I actually have to work that much. And like for me coming into it, I was like, all these guys who putting up these pictures and like creating this narrative are literally just like lying to people, and like they're gonna create like issues for a lot of young entrepreneurs because they're gonna expect that and then like have to suffer for like 4 or 5 years and give in like way earlier than that and be like, all right, it's not for me, just because they had that misconception to start with.
No, you know, they're destroying the culture. It's really, really bad. I put a post on on social media like a week ago, I don't know if you saw it, and it was me in front of a broken down Bentley with the hood popped up getting it. It's like, dude, like this is not real life, this fucking taking pictures in front of rented Ferraris. It's not real life at all. You know, you have to work hard, you have the sleepless nights, you have, you know, you have to worry about paying payroll to people, have to worry about making ends meet, and you know.
Yeah, you know what bothers me? Imagine a young entrepreneur hearing what you just said 100 times instead of seeing the Ferraris 100 times, right? Like, think about how different their hustle would be, because it does impact them. You understand what I'm saying? Like, it is a real psychological impact.
Well, and then the other thing is, if you can take the selfie, then you don't have to do all the work, right? Like, if I can take a selfie with a Ferrari, then I don't actually have to earn enough money to buy one. It's this really exactly. warped social media culture.
You already did it for the gram. It's exactly. done with. You don't need the car.
Exactly.
You don't gotta earn it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's so perverse, man. And you know, and what happened to, you know, providing for your family, right? Like, that's the original purpose for entrepreneurship, is providing for your family and leaving a legacy, true. Taking care of your kids. You know, and I think a lot of that does get lost with the get rich quick 1999 ebook stuff. I saw a meme. It was how to make $1 million from Facebook groups. And it was a post in a Facebook group, and it said, I'm selling my book, How to Make $1 Million from Facebook Groups, and I'm offering it exclusive to everyone in this group, and it only costs $1, and the first million copies, you're going to get it for $1.
Yeah.
And supplies are limited, right? And it's so really, funny. That's the culture that we live in. There are people that are selling information about how to run a business, and the only business that they have is selling information. I'm all for knowledge. I'm all for education. But you know, there definitely has to be a balance between practicality.
Yeah. Another thing is, like, touching upon that, and mirrors, like, right? entrepreneurs educating themselves. What I do for a lot of, like, my young guys is, like, I'll bring in books, and I'll just give them a book, like, every couple weeks, and be like, "Yo, this had a huge impact on my career. Read this book," because, like, at the end of the day, I don't know where they're going to be in 5 years. You know, God willing, they're going to be crushing it, this, that. But for me, it's like, if I can educate them through some, like, because you know what it is? And I was telling them earlier, actually, today, like, when you learn in school, like biology class or textbooks, all that stuff, doing that for like 10, 15 years, it gets you so sick and tired of books that, like, you don't want to learn anymore, right? But you know what? Imagine that teacher came up to you and was like, "All right, read these books and you have a chance to make $100,000. Like, then would you read it? Absolutely, right? So, like, think of these business books I'm giving you as, like, that opportunity where, like, you know, this is a school where if you study these things and put the time and effort you did into, like, high school or whatever, college, put that into these books and learning, like, this new major or this new hustle, this is the opportunity to actually make money off it. You know what I mean? Like, so stay hungry, like, with education. A lot of people, it gets jaded because, you know, the regular school system. And for me, it was the same thing until I picked up a few business books. And I was like, damn, I made honors here and there when I put my head down and did it. But a lot of times I wasn't a great student. A lot of times I had really bad grades. But, you know, once I saw it on the business world, like, it's a different set of books. It's a different set of insights. There's something I could go take and talk to a client about and apply tomorrow and make money. Like, it's a lot more exciting than reading a biology book, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. And you get to take someone's 20, 30, 40 years of career knowledge and you get to read it in a day or two. It's disproportionate leverage in the market to have a 19-year-old kid who's read a bunch of books from people who have more experience than them. Cool, man. So I know we're running low on time. I have, like, maybe two more questions. I guess next, what's next? What's next for Startup Boost? What's next for BizDex? Where do you see New York ecosystem?
I've been in the scene, I want to say, around, you know, believe it or not, years. Close to, like, maybe 8 to 10 years now. I've been, like, around the ecosystem. And I definitely have to say that I saw unbelievable growth in that time. And I think it's only just going to continue to grow and tribal SF as much as possible. I think it's a very different ecosystem, right? I feel like I have not been to SF enough times. I've gone, but not, like, on a consistent enough basis to, like, be speaking from fact. But from what I've heard and from what I understand, I feel like SF will always be more like, you know, create that crazy new software, like, don't worry about the money, that'll come, this, that, which is kind of what we talked about, versus New York, where it's more of like, create a product as a revenue model early on, and, like, from there, just, like, grow the company. So I feel like New York is going to continue to take on, like, a style of its own, in that it's going to be kind of, I feel like, more revenue focused with a lot of its startups, just because it's New York City and everyone wants to make money. And also because you have so many other verticals, right? So, like, New York has fashion, it has finance, you know, it even has real estate, all these different things. Whereas SF, it's only, like, tech. That's, like, all they do. So I think New York's going to continue to, like, differentiate itself in different ways, like, as far as, like, monetization and just, like, a few other nuanced things about New York that's always going to be different than the other ecosystems. And over the next couple of years, I just feel like that story's going to continue to be told by different startups, and it's going to continue to kind of build up its own swagger and, you know, style, which is going to, you know, be felt throughout the startup world. So I'm definitely bullish on like next 5-10 years as far as the New York scene specifically. As far as like what's next with what I'm up to specifically with Startup Boost, I mean, we're doing a lot more annual events now. So we're doing more like conferences and like expos. So we're gravitating towards like kind of just maybe thinning down the number of events and focusing more, like doubling down on what we've seen work the best and what has been most effective for our community over the last 5 or so years. So just a lot more like refining the process and that type of thing. And then with BizDex, I mean, it's been really good, man. Like we had a great start, you know, knock on wood. And, you know, right now we're just, a lot of our time is just spent on like scaling up the infrastructure and making sure that we're targeting prospects the right way and our pipeline is healthy and that, you know, we're doing everything by the book so that we can eventually scale, you know, down the road. So, you know, it's a, you know, different approaches for each of the two businesses. But at the end of the day, it kind of comes back to what we talked about, right? Just hustling, putting in the hours and continuing to succeed, fail, and everything in between. So
definitely. No, that's really, it's really been a pleasure to see someone almost take ownership of the New York tech scene. You know, I talk about this a lot when I talk about my background. Like, there was no tech scene. I was learning to code. There was no Google headquarters. There was no Twitter headquarters. And it was really crickets. So to see you really step up and help foster in the startup and tech ecosystem, and put us on the map, you know. Like I have friends that come into town from other places, and I always recommend them to attend your event so that they can see, like, yeah, there is a New York tech scene.
I appreciate that. That means a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. All right, cool. Final question. What does disrupt mean to you?
It's a great question. It means a lot to me, actually. So for me, it's something where, like, when you're in disrupt mode, it's something where you're basically going in on something, right? So for me, it's like right now I'm looking to disrupt the design space when it comes to like literally business tech, specifically in New York City. And like when I say disrupt, what that means is like pretty much crush everything in your path, whether it's competitors or whatever else, and just like make sure everybody knows about you like a year or two from now. Like when do you hear the word like, oh, I need like a business deck or like a, you know, fundraising or B2B sales deck? Like they're going to think BizDex because we disrupted the space and people know about us. So to me, it's like a very important a word. You know what I mean? Like when you're disrupting an industry, that means that like you went heads down, you went in and you did everything that like no one else was willing to do, you know?
Absolutely. Thank you, man. Yeah. I really appreciate your time. Absolutely. I appreciate your contribution to New York City. And
thank you, man. You do so much as well, Anthony, whether it's you know, in New York or Newark or in Puerto Rico, man, you've gone above and beyond in so many cases. I've seen you do it, and you know, actions speak louder than words. So definitely pat yourself on the back.
Thanks
for that.
Thank you, brother. I definitely appreciate your kind words as well. For people that want to connect with you on social media and or people that want to, you know, check out your businesses, what's the best places to do that?
So you could check me out on, I'm trying to think, Instagram is probably where I'm most active. It's just Jason Malki, so JasonMalki. On Twitter, which I'm not as active, but it's just Jason Nabil Malki. So it's JasonNabil Malki, Malki. And then, yeah, man, if anyone wants to shoot me an email, my direct email is jason@startupboost. Startup spelled kind of funny. It's StartupBoost. So it's basically jason@startupboost.com, but no A in startup. So if anyone wants to reach out, talk synergies or needs advice, even mentorship, whatever it is, feel free to reach out.
Awesome. Jason, thank you so much for being on the show, brother.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Talk soon.
Talk soon, brother.